Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Lisnick Behind the Curtain. It's my chance to step away from the worlds of law and politics, which you watch me cover on WGN-TV every day, and into the world of theater and arts, which is my passion. And we get to do that here on the WGN Radio podcast, Behind the Curtain. As always, to regular viewers and listeners, thanks for joining us today, looking at a phenomenal show called Billy Elliot. I hope you've seen it at some point in the past. My history goes back actually to the national tour when I actually did a behind the curtain television show of Billy Elliot and including Elton John and others who were involved in that. Great fun. That makes you jealous, Trent. But now we get to talk about the one that's going on at Paramount Theater in Aurora. It is playing through March 24th. Let me introduce you to my guests and let's get underway and chat about it. First of all, since I already called you out, Trent Stork is the director of the show, directing so many things at Paramount, by the way. And as I mentioned to you before we started, I wanted to interview you in so many previous shows that you've done, like Kinky Boots and some of the others. You just do fabulous work. So we finally get together and I'm so happy about that.
Hey, thanks for that. We finally get to meet.
Yes.
In a box.
And then bringing back an old friend. I'm old. She's not, but it's an old friendship, is Michelle Aravina, who, well, not that old. We talked back when it was about Damn Yankees, which was up at Marriott Lincolnshire, but now playing Mrs. Wilkinson. What a great role, by the way, Michelle. That's such a rich role in this.
It's the Billy best. Elliot. It's the best. I keep saying, like, this is a role I could do for years and years and years because she gets to do it all. She gets to do it all. Yeah. Emotionally, physically, she gets to do everything.
Does Lola shine through it all for this at all?
There might be a little Batma in there. I don't know.
We might. Oh, that's a good point. And speaking of Damn Yankees, let me talk to your co-actor from Damn Yankees, Ron Raines, who plays the dad in this show. Now, admittedly, Ron, in Damn Yankees, we kind of saw you come and go and come again and leave and...
Yep. I was there at the beginning, the very end, as old Joe, before I lost my shoe.
And yes, that's right. But here you played the dad for Billy Elliot. Also a great role because, and so tough. We're going to talk about the show. So let me just get everybody introduced. And Spencer Milford, who plays Tony, Billy's older brother. I'm curious, Spencer, I'm going to go ahead and start with you since this is a question I was going to ask, but here we are. So sure. Tony is very different from brother Billy. And so is that... I'm guessing you're very different from Tony. So talk a little bit about who Tony is, and it probably is a bit of a stretch. I mean, the show takes us back to 1984 and what was going on, but the show's got to be a stretch from who Spencer really is, I think. I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Being American, class is a big deal over here, but over there, it's an even bigger deal. And the show deals a lot with class. And the Elliots are definitely working class, being miners. They're raised in this community that everyone basically has a job at the mine or around the mine. And so they're just, he's a super gruff, like, guy. Like, his job is down and dirty, manual labor. And it's definitely, it's a phenomenal part to play. It's honestly a dream role of mine to be able to do this part because it reminds me of a lot of kids that I grew up with who were like, oh, you like dancing is for girls, you know, singing is stupid, like theater is, you know, theater is not something that guys are interested in. It's, you know, it's too sissy. Mm-hmm. And Tony kind of brings some of that like toxic masculinity to the show. And then the beautiful part about the role is that he changes in the second act and he finally sees the potential in Billy and that there is something special about this kid and there is something more than this town and this job. And that's to see, you know, your loved ones go on and do great things. And so he has a really nice he's got a really nice arc in the second act.
Yeah, absolutely.
That I love to play.
It's a great character. I should say that we talked about whether we'd have Billy join us, but there's a couple of young actors, both 12 years old, who play Billy. And yeah, I want to be unfair to one over the other and that kind of thing. But let me pull out of Spencer's answer a little bit and come to you, Trent, because for folks who might have listened to what Spencer said, but said, now, I'm not quite sure what he's talking about. What is Billy Elliot all about? So let me come to you to give us the story of Billy Elliot. It started as a movie. Jamie Bell, I remember that.
Yeah, it started as a movie. It's a story about a kid named Billy Elliot who lives in Easington in County Durham, England. And he grows up in a really rough town. The town is mostly coal miners. The whole town centers around that industry. And he kind of stumbles his way into a ballet class one day. And there's something about it that he's really attracted to. He loves the feeling that is kind of coursing through his body. And he meets a woman named Mrs. Wilkinson, who kind of sees something in him and starts pulling this kind of God-given talent out of him. And he decides that this is what he was born to do. This is what he wants to do. And you get to see how the family reacts to that. And you get to see how the town kind of rallies around him. And you get to see how this little kid with a dream finds a way to pursue it.
Well said. Well done. And I was going to go to Ron, but since you called out Michelle, let's talk about Mrs. Wilkinson, because Ron has the tough job in terms of being a dad and dealing with what he sees in his son. And we'll talk about that. But Michelle, talk about Mrs. Wilkinson, what she sees. And she kind of helps to turn Billy's life around a bit, at least supports what he wants.
Yes. And vice versa. So Miss Wilkinson is, you know, a middle-aged woman who kind of finds herself in a very uninspired life, with a husband she doesn't really like, with a job that she doesn't really take seriously, until this boy walks into the room. And he suddenly ignites something in her that has been gone for a long time. And he inspires her and makes her passionate again about teaching and about the art form. And you know, and then the rest of her journey is she's determined to give this boy every opportunity that perhaps passed her by growing up. Because Trent and I had talked a little bit about, you know, was she a performer growing up? Did she have aspirations to continue this professionally? And I think she did, which is why she jumps on board so quickly and so aggressively. And I think everything that she does for Billy is, of course, partially for Billy, but also for herself. And I don't think she realizes how much Billy has done for her.
Yeah, that's well said, because I mean, as I said, I've seen the show a million times. I never really thought about that perspective of what it was in it for her in all of this. This time around, it's something to pay attention to. And Ron, let me come to you, because speaking of, here we have Michelle sort of saying, let me think about my character and what she was after and all of that. You're playing a dad. Again, this is taking place. It is 1984, right? It's the miners' strike, Trent. So that is where this is.
1985. Yep.
Yeah. So around that era. And maybe things are different today, Ron, you know, for what a dad might be thinking when his son wants to go into the arts and related fields. But talk to me about how you approached your character of the dad. And was that a tough thing for you? Was it, I'm guessing it's not who you might be today if your kid wanted to go in that direction.
Yeah, I think I would be a little more lenient than Jackie Elliott is to Billy. But I do have two sons myself. And so, you know, when it comes to having those two boys and dealing with them, it's not much of a stretch for me. Both of my boys are very different. And so it's not too big of a stretch.
Well, tell us about Ron. Tell us about that role that he has to play, because he also transforms during the course of the show.
Yeah, Jackie Elliott definitely does. You know, he's a working class guy, and he expects his sons to follow in his footsteps and be down there working with him until he can no longer work. You know, he's also a guy who is broken. He was deeply in love with his wife, who Trent and I talked about how, and Spencer also talked about how she may very well have died of, you know, black lung or, you know, secondhand smoke from us smoking constantly. So it's you know, we're all broken. We're kind of a broken family. There's a missing cog in our life, and that shows up. And I, as Jackie, I try my best to to keep the family together. I'm not very good at it. And I get the advice in Act Two from Mrs. Wilkinson. I get the advice to help out my son, and I do what I can. I try to do what I can to make it happen, but it doesn't go quite as good as I hope.
And thank you all for kind of talking about your characters. And Trent, I want to come back to you because, again, folks watching us or listening to us might sort of say, okay, so it's about this family and it takes place in 1984, 85. And as though we're talking about a period piece with this character development. But you make it clear in your director's note, which is something, of course, that hopefully everybody in the audience reads maybe before the show begins. This show is much bigger than that for you. This is not just about this family and this time of a miner strike and the changes these characters go through. This story is about a kid with a dream who lives in a big, big, nasty world. I'm kind of parroting some of your words from your note, but talk about, because you're the director here, so you sat down with this project and you didn't say, I've got this little story to tell.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And it's like every time I try to approach it, every time I approach a different piece, I think about, like, with theater, we're not making something that's going to last forever, right? We're doing something that is going to have a run in a certain year, in a certain time. And how do we make that, the message of this piece, really reflect the times in which it lives in, even if it is a period piece? You know, and I sat down, I started thinking about Billy in this town, trying to pursue this dream. And I just started thinking about every kid, you know, in the world right now that's like looking out there, that looks at their phones and reads the news, or is looking out their window and seeing what's happening in their towns. And those kids are still dreaming. You know, those kids are still thinking about what they're going to do in the future. So many kids have dreams and this big, nasty world that's just like put up against them that they've got to overcome. And I think that's something we can all really relate to. And it's something that I think we can have a lot of empathy for, these kids in these massively negative circumstances, and how at the end of the day, they still hope, they still dream. Some kids still make it out. Some people still do get to pursue their dreams, you know? And so making sure that the show felt contemporary in that way, that Billy could be any kid in the world right now, and that it's not just locked in a period of a piece that happened to this one kid one time.
Yeah.
It's about a lot of kids.
Yeah. And the thing is, Spencer, that first of all, back when it's set, there's this miner strike going on. It kind of frames the piece in terms of the events. But in many ways, I assume you see, because you and Ron is that you both are, you have to deal with that. You got to deal with that strike because this is your field. This is your work. But at the same time, I always saw that miner strike is also symbolic of just anything that we're going through stuff these days. When aren't we going through something political and something real? And people may not remember Maggie Thatcher when they see the show. They'll look her up afterwards if they don't. But once again, even the political issues, Spencer, are bigger than just that miner strike, I think.
Oh, totally. And I mean, there's a big battle between, in the play, my character and a lot of the miners in the town are socialists, and they see themselves as socialists fighting against the evil fascist regime of the Tory government running the United Kingdom at the time, that's what they see in their world. That's how they view Maggie Thatcher and all the Tories in London, who are kind of controlling their lives from so far away that they don't really see what it's like to be in the working class and in the North and get down and dirty. But but like you were saying, it's all throughout history, there's always pushback against the government, pushback against religion, like something that's keeping you from, or keeping these dreamers, like Trent was talking about, from achieving their goal. And in our case, it's, you know, Maggie Thatcher trying to shut down the mines in the UK, which she successfully did. And, you know, it destroyed many, many lives, and people are still dealing with the repercussions from that in the UK. And it's a tricky subject because, you know, the economy in the UK did improve after that, but, you know, at what cost is the story to be told from the miner's perspective.
And Ron, I'm going to be super nerdy with this, but, and Trent, you can tell me I'm an idiot so with this underlying sort of strike thing going on, but I want to take you, Ron, to the last moment of the show which people will be floored by. I don't think I ruin it by saying what it is, but let's just say that miners are going down in a miner's elevator. That's not ruining anything. I'm always careful about that because I interviewed the cast of Dear Evan Hansen, and I said to them, is there anything you don't want me to give away? And one of the cast members said, don't say that Connor dies. I went, he dies in the first 12 seconds of the show. What?
Wait, so I'm very, wait a minute, he dies?
Uh-oh, did I ruin that for you? But anyway, Ron, so, but for me, the moment of that ending of the show, people will see it to see just the power of it. It's tear provoking. It's awe dropping, but, or mouth dropping. But at the same time, for me, it kind of pulls everything together beyond the miner's story.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know how much we can say. How much do we give away?
I'm turning it to you. Kent will stop you if you.
Well, yeah, and you can cut it out if I say too much, right? So we all go together as one. We stand up together and as miners at the end of it, when the strike is when the strike is over, we all go back down to work together. And the people that are left are, you know, grandma kind of defend for herself while I'm off at work and little brother that goes off to pursue his dreams. So, I mean, we've got pride in what we do and hopefully he shines.
Yeah. It's just, you're sneaking in some music lyrics in there. I like that. Michelle, let me come back to you. Let's talk about the music a little bit. You know, when you do music today, you go, oh, it's probably a Mark Shaman thing, or it's a, you know, mm-hmm. You're doing Elton John music. And I'm just sort of curious it's not Elton John's only show, though. I would argue this is one of the great ones. I just worked, of course, he was just here not all that long ago doing Devil Wears Prada. And he didn't come to the opening night. And he said he was to things going on, whatever. But and I did like that show. But now having talked to Jerry Mitchell and finding out that Elton John is completely rewriting the score, I think, and there may be more to it than that. But in this show, I think the Billy Elliot music, Michelle, is just some of the most brilliant, at least certainly brilliant Broadway music that he's written. Everything he's done is great. But what's it like sort of trying to tackle Elton John music as opposed to maybe what I'll call a more traditional Broadway writer like a Shaman and a Whitman or something?
Well, I have to be honest. The numbers I... So when you think Elton John, you think a certain thing. And when I first heard this musical, nothing about it screamed Elton John to me, which I think is really... very, very cool. Yeah. He's got some beautiful ballads. Some the stuff that Billy sings is just stunning. But then he's got these crazy songs that come out of nowhere, mostly my songs. That are
why asked like, you?
Yeah, they're kind of like this odd departure. And I will be honest, this is my second time doing the show. The first time it took me a second to wrap my head around it because it was so out of nowhere. But now, as I continue to do the show and continue to like layer in and think about it constantly, I think it's all on purpose and I think it works. And I think what I love mostly about it is that it doesn't sound like Elton John. Because what musical? Oh boy, we might
just... if you were going to pick out a song that's Elton Johnny, wouldn't you say Electricity maybe?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like some of the Billy stuff, like some of the letters a little.
Grandma
like,
song is great. Funny.
Yeah, but like Shine and Born to Boogie, yeah. And Boogie was from the movie. So it's a little like kind of all over the place, but I think it's appropriate.
Yeah, well, and it had to be, right? And that's what makes it work. Trent, you might find this fun. When I interviewed Elton John for Billy Elliot when it was first happening, and I had heard the song Electricity, and I, you know, that's all over the place. And I'm going to ask you about how you, you know, direct people to have them get through this music. But I asked him whether when he wrote Electricity and the range that it covers, whether he was conscious of how a little kid, whatever, might do it. His answer to me was, no, not really. I just wrote the song it needed to be. And good luck. I mean, my words, good luck to them in doing it. But the song is what it is. Yeah, did it present any challenges to you, Trent, in terms of when you looked at that score? And I knew you knew it already, but...
Well, and that makes a lot of sense because because I'm also the casting director for Paramount Theater, and it almost feels like he wrote it as like an audition test. this role requires the endurance of a small godlike boy to be able to be able to ask anybody to dance for 2-3 minutes nonstop as a solo, no less, and then have to sing again, and then have to dance again. Like, it almost feels like it was an endurance test.
But think about where it comes in the show.
At the 11th o'clock.
Audition, yeah.
Right, yeah, right.
Exactly. And it's not
Can you explain 11 for people who don't understand what an 11 o'clock number is?
Yeah, it's like the big number that comes right before the end of the show.
And it used to be at 11 o'clock in New York years ago. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not like Billy had like a couple scenes to like wrap ahead of time.
No, it's in every scene.
Little Kid is on stage from the very moment, basically throughout the very end, and has his hardest song at the 11 o'clock number, where he has to dance and sing by himself for 4.5 minutes.
And Elton didn't care.
That's why you get a 12-year-old.
Exactly right. Elton said, "Deal with it."
That's why they're 12.
Exactly.
Do it.
Well, how do you? So tell me how the young fellows who play Billy. I mean, was it or are their voices just so great that they're like, I don't have a problem with this? Or was there a lot of work and challenge involved in that, Trent?
I mean, like, these boys are just so good. They're just so talented. So it made, you know, it was kind of like, well, that's Billy. Hello. It makes the casting process actually pretty easy because when you're casting roles like that that are so, you need like such the cream of the crop, you need the people that can actually just do it 4 to 8 times a week, that it actually makes casting those roles really easy because there's only so many that are out there.
Right.
And I think that Billy Elliot too, you know, it just has a hold of people. It's a beautiful show. And so there are so many young kids across the country that are, you know, this is their dream role, and they've only got so much time to kind of get it in. So,
and I'm curious, Spencer, do you give a rougher time to one Billy over the other, Neo versus Sam?
No, I mean, I love both Sam and Neo. They're amazing. Honestly, I've been so impressed, obviously, with their dancing. Like, to play Billy Elliot, you have to be a phenomenal dancer.
Yeah.
But I've been so impressed how these kids have grown as actors over the course of rehearsal process and also like through previews, now that we're in the run, these kids are just so engaged throughout the whole time, and I can really tell that they're really listening and really responding to what's happening on stage, which, you know, the role is so demanding that it could be very easy for them to like kind of tune out when they're in a scene, but they're like sitting on the side because they've got this big dance number coming up and they have to sing and they have to hit this high note and they have this emotional scene coming up. But like, these kids are always in it. They're always on. And yeah, it's just amazing. I was a young actor in the show actually, on the first national tour in Chicago. And so it's kind of like, there's an element of, I don't know, nostalgia, like watching these kids do it. I'm like, I'm transported to 14 years ago and like, just doing the show. So, yeah, they're amazing.
So the next time around you'll be playing dad.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
That's the aging process.
What about me? What am I going to be playing?
You would
grandma.
You'll be making your second time around, Ron. We're going to have you as Billy.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to put something, this is a little bit of the kind of the elephant that is or isn't in the room, but I think a lot of people, when they, what they know about the show, this little kid wants to be a dancer and whatever. And I think that for some people that automatically triggers that this thing is about, you know, being gay and coming out and all that. And there are gay characters in the show and all of that. But Ron, as far as Billy goes, this is not about that. That's just not what it is. I mean, it might be about image in dad's mind, but this isn't about Billy's sexuality or anything like that, I don't think.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think his dad is worried that he is not. I think his dad is worried that he's going to be.
No question, the dad is worried about it. I agree with that. But yeah, in terms of who Billy is and in control of who he is.
Oh no, no, no! I mean, I don't think Jackie. I don't know where Jackie ends up. All I know is Jackie needs to support his kid in the best way he can. If this is what he wants to do, if this is going to be his future, then I'm going to be as supportive as I can. And if he goes off, and I think he comes to some understanding that if it turns out that way, that's fine. But I'm going to do whatever I need to support it.
Which is such a beautiful thing for the, you know, for this dad and these people who lived back then and the, and being minors and the, you know, the world that they were in. And Trent, I guess what triggered it for me is there's so many horrible things going on right now to people in the trans community and all of that. And this show has nothing that doesn't bring those issues up. But for me, it triggers thoughts about that stuff. And what Ron just said is the most important message, which is just accept people and support people. And that's all that matters. Fair enough.
Absolutely. And what I love about it in the show too is that with Billy, it's undefined, right? We don't get an answer about who Billy is on the inside, right? Because the ultimate message of the show is that it doesn't matter. You can express yourself in any way you want. If you want to dance, if you want to be a minor, if you want to dress up in women's clothing for tonight, for tomorrow, for your whole life, it doesn't matter. Like, just live your life as authentically and as true as possible. And don't worry about other people's business.
What's funny about the culture in the UK, at least at that time, there's two references about grown men dressing up in men's clothes. There's Michael's father. He says, "Oh, my dad does it all the time." And then, Jackie apparently at some point in the past has sung Big Spender.
Right.
Which is a woman's song to sing and a stripping song. So I've seen many, many comedians, you know, in drag throughout the years, you know, Dame Edna, right? Yeah. Among many English cross dressers or however you want to call them back in the day. But to really go there was not manly enough, I guess. Back then.
Yeah. And by the way, Barry Humphries, who just died, I think about within the last year or so, who played Dame Edna, loved Barry, loved Dame. It was great. Michelle, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to because the reason I love this show so much and I'm so passionate about it is because what I take away from it the most is we are teaching the story we are telling is the story to be who you're going to be. And Michael says it in his lyric, what the hell's wrong with expressing yourself? Be who you want to be. And for me, that's it. And that could be just because of what the journey that my character takes, right? Because I really kind of put my foot down a couple times, you know, with Tony, with Dad, saying, you sound ridiculous. This is not what it is anymore, right? So I think it's that little show stealer, you know, that number that he does is, for me, the lesson of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Erickson, that. Don't worry about it. My dad does it all the time. Just be who you want to be. It's fun. This feels good.
Exactly.
Which is back in the 80s. I mean, the show was just like so forward, that storytelling. But the fact that we're still, to date, pushing that narrative and pushing that lesson, right? Getting our world to live in a very open, you know, let people just be who they want to be. So for me, I mean, thinking about it makes me cry. That's why for me this story is so important.
And I do love, I mean, the character of Michael is so great, and he's sort of the, you know, a bit of he's what Billy's not. I mean, in terms of he's just out there and whatever, and it's just so much fun. Trent, did you, now I'm not talking about this particular actor, but there's a concern I think in this show that the Michael character could become a scene stealer in a lot of what happened. Did you see that here?
Not on our show. No, not at all.
Oh, good Lord.
I mean, it's been that. You know, they gave him a number, the number of all the numbers in the show for this little to do in a dress, you know, and it's, and
then we have Gabe. Yeah.
He's great.
He's amazing.
I love it. The other thing I was, Trent, let me stick with you. When this show first opened, as I said, it was 2010 that it was first in Chicago. I think it was pre-Broadway, because that was when I did the TV show. So I know it was 2010. And I always wondered back then whether this is something that could be become a dated piece, sort of like, you know, Oklahoma got dated until they modified it a couple of years ago and made it into a murder mystery or something. But I don't know what the hell they did to Oklahoma, but anyway, with this, it really isn't, it's not a period piece. I mean, it could play that way, but it doesn't.
No. And like, because the messages that are in the show are so universal, I don't see that Billy Elliot is ever going to be a show that feels dated, because either way, the message is pretty clear. I hope that maybe the world loosens up a little bit about how they view certain aspects that are dealt with in the show, but it is. It's just such a beautiful show, and it's so well written that I really do think it will stand the test of time.
Yeah. And the expansion. I just realized, Spencer, I'm sorry, this is just hitting me now, but I saw you perform. You did a great job at Black Ensemble Theater. And, in the Taste of Soul show, right?
Yeah.
So, and I just, you know, and I thought there too, when you think about diversity and support and all of that, was that I'm off the track for just a second. Was that a good experience for you?
Oh my God, I loved it. It was a blast. I grew up listening to like a ton of soul music. So to be able to sing that kind of stuff, I do a lot of musicals. So it was like totally something that I'm not normally used to doing. And I was also brought on as the dance captain of that show. So I got to really dance, really like, yeah. I mean, who doesn't love soul music? It was amazing.
Yeah. So anyway, tip of the hat to you on that. I'm talking to him going, that's where I know him from. And, you know, respect to that. And Michelle, by the way, because when we've talked before, you've been on Broadway, actually several of you have been on Broadway and all that kind of stuff. Do you like kind of just coming home to, I mean, Paramount is like going, I mean, the theater is unbelievable. But you prefer sort of being in Chicago and doing this here? Would you send me back to New York?
Oh, that's a tough question. I love Chicago so much. I have performed here a bunch. I'm so lucky to. It's my favorite city by far. My favorite thing about performing in Chicago is the mentality of the community, the actors community, which is very different from New York. All the actors here really work in a community kind of aspect where, to explain it, would be like, you know, maybe Ron is the lead starring person of this one show, but then the next show he takes a secondary role, and we're all just kind of in it together to like bring these stories to life. And there's not this constant kind of like, we got to get better, take the next step up, which New York provides, and that's also good for us, right? Because it brings a drive that we need. But there is something about coming to work in Chicago where you walk into the room and you really know that everybody is there to work together as a team, which is ultimately what this should be.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, as you get higher up, even in TV film, as you get higher up, you know, we're all fighting for ourselves. And sometimes we forget that family mentality. And it's why I would come back here over and over and over again if they'll have.
It's not the Mr. Coffee pot they made sure is in your room behind you.
Stop looking at my stuff.
Well, the last time we talked, you were in a room and all I could look at was a lamp that was remember the lamp?
Larry, no, I was going to do that to you again, but I decided. Okay.
And Ron, just briefly, let me just come to you as well. Chicago audiences, you know, same downtown. You've been in so many theaters around here. I mean, what's your sense of the Paramount audience? They just love what gets presented there.
They do, because Paramount always produces huge, beautiful shows. I mean, the place is amazing to sit in and watch a show and to be on stage, and the professionalism of all the crew members backstage. And it's just a great place to work.
If people haven't been there, it's a theater you just got to see. Billy Elliot is playing at the Paramount Theater through March 24th. Trent, that's the date, right? Just March 24th. Okay, because you got to move on to the next one. And tickets can be gotten at ParamountAurora.com. Don't miss this show. It is just so phenomenal. My thanks to all of you for being with me for this one. Trent, I've been trying to meet up with you for so long to do all of this. And Ron, great to see you perform again. And Michelle and Spencer, good to see you perform again, even though it hit me late.
Thanks.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Paul.